Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Marriage and Martinis. I'm Adam, and here's Danielle.
Hi.
That's a weird hi.
Hi.
what's going on in there?
I don't know. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
Ian and I, our middle son and I did the Rugged Maniac yesterday.
Oh, my God. First of all, and second of all, if you could see Danielle's leg, I almost passed out and threw up just seeing it.
It's not that bad.
It's pretty bad.
I know. The Rugged Maniac, there should be a whole, like, people over 40 should be allowed to do it separately.
Right.
Because I was trying to keep up with, first of all, we're doing it with my 11-year-old son, who, like, he could have done it three times around,
right.
Probably.
Very athletic, so.
Yeah. And, you know, and you're just there with all these, like, young people who make it all look so easy, and then you follow them, and you're like, I'm going to do that, too. And then you're like, nope, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
So, but we did it. It was really fun, but
I'm
it was also 96 degrees.
But, like, 110 heat factor,
yeah,
whatever that
it
is.
Yeah, it was really hot out. But anyway, so I am exhausted today. My recovery, I will be taking this whole week and napping and making up for all the exhaustion of the Rugged Maniac. I'm just preparing you. So today we're talking to Nick He, and he wrote this book, Two Dads and Three Girls. And when I started following him on Instagram, I knew I had to read his book. He is originally from China, born and raised in China, in a very, very, very strict traditional upbringing that never really talked about sexuality. So when he started to have ideas that maybe he was attracted to men, it was really scary to him. And I will let him tell the rest of the story. He is the sweetest guy. What he's been through and his story are completely inspiring. And it just shows that every story is beautiful. And I love that now he has this happiness and this great life. So here's Nick He. All right. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Danielle. How are you?
Nick, how are you?
Hi, Adam. How are you? I'm good.
Good. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. Thank you so much for having me.
Sure.
I'm really excited.
Oh, thank you for coming on. And I read your book and I really liked it. It's called Two Dads and Three Girls. And I loved it. I read it pretty quickly, actually. I didn't read the whole third part about the surrogacy and everything. But I'm not through it yet, but it's all so interesting. And if you want to tell us a little bit about the background of the book, what made you write it, anything you want to tell us.
So my name is Nick, but my Chinese name is Yu. So I'm always there. I 100% made in China, and I was shipped to United States in 2007. And I got my MBA in East Coast, and then I moved to Seattle after that. So looking back, I think I always say I'm a 100% confused straight kid as well, Graham, in China. I never really understand sexuality. Our sexuality class is like, a sex education class is like 45 minutes for the whole 12 years. So I never really also have time to really thinking about who I am, and then do I like girls, do I like boys? So after coming here, and then I came out to myself, I found my partner, Brian, and then now we have three girls through the surrogacy. I just feel so happy, so blessed. But I never want to tell my story. When we have our twins, they're Hanalei and Chelsea, they're 2 years old now, and a gay media, they want to interview us, make a video of our family. At the time, I talked to my partner and said, do you want to share the story? And then he said, no. And then I feel the same way. It's like we work so hard to build a family. And then we just feel like why we want it to be public. So everything changed. Think about why we want to write this book. There are two things. The first thing is Andrew Solomon. So yes. He's a famous writer.
Oh my God, I was going to talk to you about Andrew Solomon.
Yeah, I watched his TED Talk, how the worst moment in life really impact, made the most out of you, basically. And then so every time I listen to that TED Talk, it just made me cry. And I just thinking about he called to action, like go out to tell the story and then to make the world a better place.
Mm.
So that's where it planted the seed. But still, I don't have a trigger. So the trigger is last December. It's my partner Brian and I went to an event called Best Year Ever event in San Diego. So it was hosted by the Miracle Morning guy. So I practice Miracle Morning every morning. The five rituals, try to make the best of my life.
What is a Miracle Morning?
So, So Miracle Morning, they're five things. They believe in successful people. They all do five things in the morning, starting from doing exercise and then doing meditation, doing reading, and then also visualize your future and then doing the affirmation. So those are the things I do every morning. And there's the sixth one is about scribing, write down stuff. So sometimes I do five, sometimes I do four, sometimes I do all six. But those are the good times. It's like before everybody wake up and I can do something to think about what my future wants to be. It's like the book, The Secret, you know, or the Netflix.
Uh-huh. Yep.
It's like once you want something and the world will come here to help you. Or like The Alchemist. I believe in, I'm not religious, but I believe in all those. There are somebody up there. So the event was hosted by the Miracle Morning guy, Hal. And in the event, he talked about what do you want to leave in the world when you die? And then that started to push me to thinking about all the struggles I had when I was a little boy, when I meet Brian, the gay culture, the first time I experienced it. And then, I don't know, and during that event, Brian and I discussed, we said, we want to write this book. We just want to help people that who may be still struggling about their sexuality or anything, just people telling them they cannot be themselves, and then there's a choice. So yeah, so after coming back from the trip, I decided to write a book. And then here we go, 6 months later, it is out there now.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did, and I agree. I think that, you know, we tell our story, Adam and I, every week, because same thing, we want everybody to know they're not alone, and we all struggle, and we're all here for each other too. So I think that's great, and I think it's amazing. I'm obsessed with Andrew Solomon. Did you watch the documentary Far From the Tree, the Hulu documentary? And he wrote a book, Far From the Tree. Oh, you have to watch it. It's fantastic. And everybody listening to this, you should definitely either go read the book or and one thing that he talks about the idea of love versus acceptance. That we love our is one thing to love your children. It's another thing to accept them. And that we want to feel loved, but even more than that, we want to feel accepted. And I think that's a lot of what you've dealt with, because when you first came out to your parents, and we'll get to that, it was a struggle. But a lot of that has to do with do you think the Chinese culture and being raised in China and what it was like there?
Yeah, I do think that has a lot of impact. It's like, in China, it's very easy, especially I was born in 1982. That's when the open door policy, which means China is first opening the economy to the Western world. And then so the Western companies can go into China to build factories and doing different things actually to help the economy locally and also help the country to grow. At that time, I was the only child. That's also the only child policy. So all the parents, their expectation is on me. I need to be the best kid that possible. And then the Chinese infrastructure is not that good. I mean, the education infrastructure. So there are only so many kids can go through college, can really get a good job. Otherwise, they need to go to Nike's factory to work. So I need to fight everybody, all my friends, and then to be the person who can, what we call, cross a single lock bridge, and then to the other side, to have the glory, if you call those. And then I was lucky I passed that. But it is during that journey that I don't have any other choice to thinking about who I am, what is the sexuality. And then my parents always say, no dating at school. So that's the policy they set up. And then no dating at school. Otherwise, I need to go to work in the factory. And so that's the way I grew up in. And then on one side, it limits my ability to thinking about my sexuality. On the other side, I feel happy about that. This gives me what I have, everything today. I used to hate my Chinese education, but I'm so grateful for that now. Everything happened for a reason.
Getting back to China, can you tell us a little bit about what it was like growing up there and what you experienced mentally and the struggle that was going on in your mind and just the fact that you felt like you couldn't even explore any sexuality? And in fact, you say in the book that the first time you even ever heard the word homosexual was in college.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. So I never really thinking about sexuality. I always see there's a girl in my middle school, and then we call each other mentor mentee. This I'm mentoring her on her chemistry. So we were dating every day. No, I thought this dating, together. I thought that's love. I thought it's everything. But other than that, I don't know. It's like love is such a, or dating is such a taboo. It's like parents just don't want you to do that. And then so I was getting close to her, but that experience was cut short, short very quickly. Just at that time, my death mate, that was actually the memory I want to forget for so long. But writing this book, make it to come alive. It's I was in my, I think it's my middle school. I think it's in U.S. It's the 10th grade, I think. And then it's the Chinese Communist policy class. We need to recite a lot of different things about the Communist Party. That's what every kid needs to do, and then take the exam. I was so bored. I don't like history and Communist Party, the policy, because it's boring. It's just reciting. And then my deathmate just start suddenly grabbing me. I found there's something in my private area. And then he grabbed so tight. And then he asked me, am I dating that girl, that the girl I was mentoring? And then he told me that is his girlfriend, that he cannot, I cannot be with her anymore. I don't even think we're dating at that time, but he just keep harassing me every other day. And then I tried to shut it down. I tried to all use all different ways, try to distract myself from that. And then at the same time, my mom back home, she loves me so much. And then she heard from other parents that I am spending time with a girl. And then she keep telling me that on the dining room table, say, oh, some other kids. And then they have dating in school, and then they didn't go to college. So all these pressure, just, I think what they do to me is made me not to deal with it. So what I did something very well is I just bury all those thoughts, bury the harassment, the power, you know, from my deathmate who wanted to show me that he is better than me, he's over me. And then from the girl that I think I like, I don't know, and then all just shallow it down in my heart that I never have time to process it until I'm writing the book. So writing this book, it's like every day I woke up at 4:30 to 5 o'clock and I just go to my office, start writing a lot of the morning. My partner, Brian, he does P90X in the morning. After he finished, he comes to the office, just see me crying there. And then he's like, are you okay? I was like, I'm so happy. I'm so happy I'm reliving all the moments that I don't even want to touch before. Because I just feel like processing, a lot of time we're so busy fighting the obstacles the life is throwing at us. We don't have time to process all those. But writing this book gave me a chance to process it. I want to write this book to help other people, to want other people to see that it's not the happy photos I share with my three girls, with my partners, that's important. It's a story, it's a struggle behind it. And then, but to be honest, I feel like after writing this book, the person got help the most is myself.
Yeah.
Sure.
I just feel so happy after writing this book.
Yeah.
Anyway. Sorry, you asked about China.
No.
It's wonderful. You weren't just processing it. You're doing something good with it. So you're seeing, you know, it's helping yourself and others. So it's not just a process. Yeah. You're doing something really, really valuable with it, which is great.
Yeah, thank you. And then go back to what Danielle was saying. It's like China, the environment. And then I realized we all grew up in different environments. When I started writing the book, some friends start, oh, strangers actually, start reaching out to me. They also have problems about their sexuality. And then they, because of religion, I remember there's one lady, I think she lived in East Coast, in the New England area. I thought it's very open, but she said her family is so religious that she cannot be gay. But now she's in her 35 or 36. Now she can finally come out to herself.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like it is all kinds of environment that constrain us. Constrain who we need to be. And then on the other side, I just feel like I'm so happy that I am gay. I'm so fortunate because because I'm gay, I can decide to quit my job at Microsoft and then to start my own career as entrepreneur. When our older daughter is 1 year old, the other twins are still in the belly of our surrogate mother, and I can have the courage to do what I want to do and then to live a life I want, you know, because coming out to myself is hard. So all those decisions seems to be easier now.
Right.
So, anyway.
Right. Well, one thing also that Andrew Solomon says all the time, And he's a huge LGBT. Well, he is gay, and he also is a big yep. LGBTQ advocate. But one of the things that he always says is we have this assumption that we all want to fit the norm, right? That if we have anything that's quote unquote, you know, not, I don't want to use the word deviant because it's not deviant, but thought by society to be, you know, our sexuality or any kind of quote unquote disability or whatever it is that makes us different from the norm, that as outsiders, we look on and we say, oh, well, they must want to fit in with the masses. They must want to be normal. When really a lot of times, no, people, you know, the things that make us different are the things that make us beautiful. And what he found in all his research was that most people don't want to rid of that stuff. They embrace it. So I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, that's so true. I think there's a big difference between fitted in and belonging to. I mean, for so long, we were taught to fit in, right? It's changing ourselves to fit in the environment. But more importantly, to find an environment that we feel belong to that environment, that everybody belongs to the believing the same value. And I think it took me so many, like 36 years to figure that out. And then I just hope my girls, they will grow up in that environment that's easy for them to, you know, to belong to. So anyway,
yeah,
I can't agree more. Yep.
Yeah. And can you talk to us about, so when you came over to the United States, well, first you went to Vancouver, correct?
First I came to Seattle, actually.
Okay.
So the Vancouver part is another part of the life, like Steve Jobs said, it's connecting thoughts. I truly believe in that. When I was in college, the senior year back in China, at that time, I know I'm a little bit different. I really know. And then, you know, it's struggling, like, who am I? And then, do I like gay? So there are internet cafes everywhere in China. And then, so I found an internet cafe, and I started to go to gay.com. So China is like a big internet. It blocked most of the website, Western website. But somehow the gay.com is available. So I always find the darkest corner. Nobody can see my screen. And I started to browse gay.com. That's where I actually find a guy, and he's from Vancouver. And then so I start talking to him. And then just that year, and then he told me that he's coming to visit Shanghai during Christmas. He wanted me to meet him. And then I met him. I spent a night with him. We didn't have sex. I don't even know what sex is. But we did have some intimacy. And then the next morning, I ran away from him. But before I ran away, because I got so scared, I thought about my future, all the future I've worked so hard for. I abandoned all of them. I thought about what my parents will say if they found that out, that I spent the night with a guy from the Western world. And then he told me Vancouver is hosting 2010 Winter Olympics. He told me how beautiful Vancouver is, the big fir tree, the ocean, the mountain. He said, I need to visit there. And then I don't think I'm going to visit there. I don't even think I'm going out of China. But at that time, I just said, okay, I will. And that actually is a memory I also forgot until in 2010, for God knows what reason. Now I know why. It's because it's a promise I made at that time. But I visit Vancouver, but it's not in the winter. It's in the summertime. And then at that time, I thought I might want to go to Vancouver because I don't know anybody there. And it's easy to go to a gay bar, to go to Craigslist to find hookup. And then, you know, and then there's nobody I don't know. So I went there, and then I tried to hook up with a guy from the gay bar, and then he almost raped me because I never had sex before. I was 28 years old, still a virgin, never had sex with a girl or a guy. And then I almost got raped, and I ran out of the hotel. And then I thought about Tom. That's the name I use for the guy, but that's not his real name. But from Vancouver, who asked me to go there. So I just think it's so fascinating that an empty promise that I thought is an empty promise I made long time ago in 2013, and I really make it happen. And that's where my come out story is, and to decide to come out to myself. So that happens in 2010. So I come to the United States in 2007, and then I went to have my MBA at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina, and then moved to Seattle in 2009. And then, yeah, after 1 year lived here, I decided to go to Vancouver, maybe for that reason.
So for that whole time that you were at Duke and everything, you were still sort of, you were closeted even to yourself.
I am. I did go to porn website, though. Gay porn website.
Yeah. So you knew you were, talk about. You were just really repressing it.
I am. I know I like guys.
Yeah.
but I'm so afraid. I remember I saw the LGBTQ. That's the first time I saw those letters. And then I quickly searched on Google to see what that means. And then I said, oh my God, it's gay. I instantly shut it down. It's like, don't think about it. At that time, it's actually in US, going to a business school. It's not different than the education in China. I need to compete with all my classmates to get a job. Especially at that time, it's the Great Depression.
Right.
If I don't have a job, I need to go back to China. I don't even have a visa to work here. You know, so it's also a lot of pressure actually at that time.
When you're talking about the internet cafe, one thing that I underlined in my book when I was reading it, because it was so powerful that you said that you searched, I guess, in the Chinese equivalent of Google while you were still in, in China when you, and you said you were blown away. You were shocked when you typed in homosexuality and all you found was one after the other. Homosexuality is a disease. Homosexuality is a shame for the family and the society. Homosexuals need to be cured. You learned about AIDS and that AIDS is the ultimate disease. And every homosexual has AIDS, or that's what you thought and everything. Mm-hmm. And so you started thinking to yourself, oh, well, maybe I have AIDS, even though you had never even been sexually intimate with anybody before. So this is, that's the first really introduction you had to homosexuality. That's a, I mean, that, that can scar you as somebody who is thinking maybe they're homosexual and that's what they're hearing for the first time about it.
That's so true. That's what I learned. Can you imagine what my parents learned? What my grandparents, they thinking about homosexuality? It's like, it's just so hard when you are confined in a world that you believe that's the truth, right? That's what I grew up in. And then so, if and I know that I am that evil, and that's just depressing, very depressing.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how they can control the internet like that and control what comes up when they, when you're searching things that they just don't want you searching for. And the end result is, look, this is bad. Don't, you know what I mean? And all the results are the negative side of whatever you're trying to find.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So that's what Google cannot go into China. It's because it's blocked. It's either you comply with the Chinese local law, which means that you need to change everything. You need to huge censorship by the government. Like right now, this is my book, by the way. So I'm translating my book into Chinese and then to just share the book for free on the internet. But when I'm translating, so many websites block it.
Oh, wow.
And you cannot share this block. And then I try to, and there are some people now try to read the book in English. They ask me to ship it back. And I cannot ship it back. All the shipping companies say it's huge censorship. Your book cannot be shipped. So I'm trying to see how, what are other ways, maybe go to Hong Kong and Taiwan to try to publish this book and then have a way to deliver to people in back in China.
Our kids have been using Greenlight Card now for, I'd say, almost a month. And it just, it totally seems like a no-brainer to me to use it. It just, it has helped so much with their spending, their saving, even to save to donate. Just, there's so many things you can do with this card. And they create savings goals for your child that encourages them to set aside money for a specific purpose and track progress towards reaching that goal. And we talked about our son. He saved up for sneakers and bought them. It was awesome. Set your own parent paid interest rate and show your kids how their money grows each month when they make good decisions to save. Our daughter's saving up for a laptop, and we are matching everything that she saves so that she can get the laptop in time for high school. And
we can put the money just right there into her account, and then she can use her card to buy the laptop.
Right.
So she's doing it by herself.
And she's been babysitting, and I've been telling the people who she's babysitting for, just put the money straight on her Greenlight card.
Yeah.
So it's awesome. There's instant transfers, real-time notifications, complete account activity history, so you can see everything they've been spending on. And you can also put your child's picture on it, which has been really fun. They love that.
They
and
love
they
that.
Show everybody.
Yeah, they love having their own card with their picture, which is so cool for them.
Right.
And also another cool feature for us, we get an alert on our phone anytime they use their card. So we know exactly what's going on and what they're doing.
Yeah, and you can also set it that if you don't want them using it at certain stores, you can place a barrier on it.
Right.
So anyway, head to greenlightcard.com/marriage to get your first month free. And then it's just $4.99 per month per family for up to 5 kids. It's a game changer. Greenlightcard.com/marriage. First month free, $4.99 per month per family for up to 5 kids. I'm going to tell you today about Nomi. It's N-O-E-M-I-E. Nomi. I love the name. And I just got this adorable elephant jewelry from them that I'm really excited about. But what Nomi is usually major brands in the jewelry industry mark up their products up to 10 times the actual cost. Nomi does things differently. It's able to provide the highest quality jewelry at a fraction of the traditional retail prices by having their own production house and only selling directly to customers. If you're tired of markups and middlemen typical of traditional retailers, Nomi pioneered their own model to design, source, create, and sell directly to you. They have quality wedding bands that are guaranteed to be better priced than anywhere else in the world and made in any size you need, literally any size. Shipping is overnight for free, so you can try it on and have up to 60 days to return for free with a full refund. Your Nomi jewelry is made to last a lifetime, jewelry for today and heirlooms of tomorrow. And Nomi created the perfect recipe for extraordinary service that combines fine jewelry, expertise, and personalized attention. So head to hellonomi.com and put in promo code MNM for $75 off any wedding bands today. That's hellonomi, N-O-E-M-I-E.com, promo code MNM for $75 off any wedding band today. All right, so tell us about now. So you talk about that you went on Craigslist and that you were dating, mm-hmm. sort of you were finding guys on Craigslist.
Yep.
So you talk about and you got yourself into all these dangerous situations. Like you said, you almost got raped. And then but sometimes you also some of the men you met were nice and understanding and told you that you actually wanted to be on Match.com. You did not want to be. Craigslist was more for sex, and that you met somebody who said, this is not what you're looking for, what you're actually looking for. You want a relationship. You want to go on Match.com.
Yeah. You know, it's like. Go back to what you just mentioned about the fitting in and belonging. And I feel like I found my group, right? The people on Craigslist. Actually, I never really have sex with any of them, the people I found on Craigslist, until I met Brian. So every time we met together, we would fool around. And then, but I always ask questions. I always want to know where they are from. What do their family think? How do they come out to their family? I'm those kind of question kids. And then they hate it. And most people are going there and just look for sex.
It's right.
Like you want to do it or not.
Right. And you're curious because so, this is all new for you.
This, I feel it's belonging. I feel like, oh my God, you are my people. Mm-hmm. And then we should help each other. What's the problem here? Why you don't want to talk to me? So there's one guy, actually, he also worked for Microsoft. And then we met on Craigslist. And then we have some fun in the first time, not sex kind of fun, but still fun. And then he asked me to come back 5 days later. So I went back and I wanted to talk more. And then
tell us about meeting Brian, who is your now husband.
Meeting Brian is just like any other Craigslist I call hookup with no real sex. And then so he sent a picture on Craigslist it's not those kind of naked photo. Or a dick pic, and it's just a full clothes picture, and I like it. Mm-hmm. He's standing behind a tree, and then it's like a pear tree or something like that, and then he has a beautiful smile. So we wanted to meet up that night, and then so I drove to his place at 9:30 or 10 o'clock, and then I went to meet with him. I don't know why, I just brought 6 packs of Blue Moon beer. I grew up in a family nobody drinks, but I always think drinking made me feel cool, you know, and then it's like fitting in again. So I brought the beer. I don't even realize Brian just got his second DUI, and then he cannot drink, he cannot do anything, but I brought the beer. So I meet with him, and then we talk for hours that night, and then he talked to me. And then so we talk, at the end we have sex. And so that's my first real sex. And then I feel so good the next day. And I just feel like I found somebody. So, but he at the same time was in an open relationship. And he's closeted to his family as well. But and then
an open relationship, meaning that he didn't believe in monogamy, correct? When you first met him, he didn't want to be monogamous, right?
No. And then he's also hooking up with different guys on Craigslist. At the same time, he also have one or two guys he constantly meeting. So they all came before me. But I do think, I don't believe in love in first sight, at least that's just me. But I know there's something there that connect us together. And then right after meeting him, and we date every single day after that for a few days. And then and right after that, and I need to go to Europe for a couch surfing trip. So this is another tangent of the story. I really don't want to leave. But when I come out to myself, I decide to travel. And I know how travel has helped me dramatically in my life to at least to come here, come to the United States, and to start a new life, to learn about different culture. So I book a trip couch surfing in Europe. And then I decided to stay with all the gay family in Europe. So that was a fun trip. I think it's a great way to learn about gay culture. And but I don't want to leave Brian, because I know if I leave Brian, he'll go back to all these other guys. But I still went either way. So that created a lot of trouble. But and also gave me a lot of time to thinking about what is gay? What does a gay mean? What do different people live in their gay life? Like the couple I met in Frankfurt, they're in their 50s. They don't have kids. And they're in love for over 20 years. They're married, but they have sex with different people all the time, every week. And then on the other side, they're Belgian. There's this couple. One of the guys from Singapore, just like me, as thin as me. And the other guy is from Belgium, a police officer. They're in love. They don't want to be with anybody else. So I told myself I want to be with the couple like in Belgium. And I told Brian that. We text each other every day. And I told him I love him. I don't know why. And my best friend at that time I met, the first person I came out to, said, I'm crazy. I'm like an 18 years old little girl, first time fell in love. This is the true love. But it worked out. So anyway. So
and I then he changes and, his mind about, he decides that maybe he could have a monogamous relationship with you.
Yeah.
How did he respond to that text? How did he respond to when you told him you love him?
He said, I'm special. He thinks this will work. He said, I'm special. He thinks this will work. Just give him some more time. That's what he said.
Good answer.
So
yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. And then you come out to your parents. And this is huge.
Yeah.
Because, and you do it in a letter.
Yeah, I cannot tell them face to face or calling them. I will give them a heart attack. My dad's heart is never good, so I don't want to do that.
And you don't think they didn't suspect it at all, right? This is a complete and total shock out of nowhere to them. A lot of parents, you come out to them and they say, oh, come on, I knew, or, you know, I suspected it. But for them and their culture and everything, this wasn't even on their radar.
Well, neither is sexuality. They're not allowed to date. They're not allowed to, you know, so there's not, you're not even seeing that happen.
Right, right. But eventually they know he's going to want to get married and everything. So to say, I found someone, I'm in love with them, it's a man.
Right.
To be honest, if I, on my side, I'm like, parents, you are dumb if I know I'm not, I'm not gay. I mean, because I don't have girlfriend, and every time it seems I want to have a girlfriend, I run away. And then I never talk about girls. There must be something going on. But for them, I think they're just in denial, just like what Adam was talking about. They don't believe that's a possibility. They don't even understand that. It's not their vocabulary. So it is a big shock to them, definitely. Mm-hmm. And then they come to visit us after my letter. I was forced to coming out to them because they visit me every year. So I need to come out to them because I was living with Brian at that time. So when they come, they know I'm not home. And I don't want to live a fake life anymore. I'm done. And I'm madly in love. So I send a letter and they came. And it's not what they're thinking, the life. I mean, everything changed. I don't stay at home anymore. The food they cook, and then we don't enjoy eating anymore. And then we don't talk anymore. So every time before, every year, they want to stay longer. They want to spend time with their only child, you know. But that year, they left 2 weeks early. And then at the airport, my mom said to me, So she never wanted to come back to Seattle anymore. I feel like she's abandoning me. Mm. And that was sad. But on the other side, Brian continued telling me that, like, give them some time, give them some space. And that's what we did. So we're focusing on our life, focusing on what we could do instead of making sure my mom will accept us. And what really changed is, again, traveling. Because we know that's actually one thing what helped Brian and me. One thing I think every relationship should have is create new experience. We all come with the baggage, our horrible memory. Like why Brian doesn't believe in marriage is also his parents' divorce. And then a lot of the family members have divorced. So that's why he doesn't believe marriage means love. But as we start traveling around the world, start to build more memories, and all those experiences is based on what we do together. So we see there's love. So marriage is just a, in our opinion, it's just one natural step moving to a commitment with each other. So that's what we did with my parents as well. We want them to accept us. So we bring them to Yellowstone National Park. We want them to enjoy the raw nature of the world and then camp with us. And then is there, my mom and I have a great talk. And then because she did homework, her homework as well, because I'm the only child, she doesn't want to lose me. She watched a lot of those kind of gay theme movies as well. She said a lot of those kids, they suicide. She doesn't want me to suicide. I told her I won't. I mean, I'll live happily. And then that's where I think we amend our relationship. And that happened a year after they left Seattle.
Wow. That's amazing. And they really did like a full 180. What?
What a fucking story.
Right?
Like, yeah. I'm blown away here. I know. Like, this is like.
And they really do. First of all, the whole Yellowstone Park, I cried through the whole thing because she really, it is amazing because parents can come around even, you know, here they knew nothing about it. And like you said, she researched and she found a place in her heart for it. And now they love Brian. Right. And,
They knew nothing about it. Right. They didn't know it was a thing. So they just knew it was wrong. And that was it.
Yep.
So once they can finally understand, it's more than just, you know, an understanding. It's realizing that that's who you are. That's who their son is. So, you know, it comes from the heart and it comes from knowledge.
Yeah, I'm helping them to break the equation like Danielle you were mentioning. So gay means shame. Gay, right. Homosexual means evil. So that's what the equation they believe in. And then for me, it's on me to tell them that that's not the truth. And then it just means we're another happy family that also have our problems, tons of problems that we fight all the time. And then that's what I need to show them. And that's also one thing I was also always sharing with my friends who are still gay, the closeted. I say, don't just go to show them you're gay. It's not the point. I mean, we are gay. That's just one part of who we are. Focusing on building your life. Like, I didn't come out to my parents until I met Brian. I didn't come out to my colleagues at Microsoft until I got married, because that's a celebration. I didn't come out to my over 90 years old grandma and grandpa back to China before we have kids, because I want them to celebrate their fourth generation down. I think that's the key, is focusing on building your life. And then once you reach all those milestones, is celebrate with the people you love. And I just think that's so important. And then it would be way easier for them to accept it.
Right. Smart.
Rather than.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. That's such good advice too. You tell the people close to you, like you told your best friend, because you knew your best friend would accept you. And then you were patient and you had to wait, and you waited for the right time. And I'm going to talk about Andrew Solomon one more time and then I'm going to stop because I'm sure. But he talks about a lot. He talks about vertical identities and horizontal identities a lot. And a vertical identity meaning they're the things that are passed down to you that you share with your family, your genetics, your culture, your religion, your race. And it makes it easy to bond with your family like that and to love your kids for all these things that they share with you. But then we also have these horizontal identities, which make up who we are, but that we don't share with our family. It might be being gay, being deaf. You might have learning disabilities, or you might be a prodigy or a genius. All of these things that we probably don't share with our family, that it makes it harder to accept sometimes. Those are the things that we need to say to ourselves. Okay, you know, those are maybe the more difficult things to understand and accept about our kids. But yet it's so important to remember that we each have that identity and we all want to feel accepted for those separate, those things that we have separate from our families. And as parents, it's our responsibility to accept for not only the vertical things that we share with our kids, but the things that we don't. The horizontal identities. And that also what you're talking about, you had found your people, that we a lot of times need people that aren't our blood family, because we need to have a place that we belong. When you were talking about belonging, that can understand us and that we identify with for those things that are our horizontal identities that our family doesn't share with us. So that's really
important.
I cannot agree more. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he always talking about forge meaning and build identity, right?
Right.
It is building those horizontal identity to understand who you are.
That's right.
And then to find a group that you can belong to. And I think that's so important.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
And that's what your parents were ultimately doing, is that now they were accepting you not only for your everything you have in common with them, but for the person you are, for, you know, for all parts of your identities. And that's amazing.
Yeah, it's also now they are experiencing a completely different world they cannot imagine. Like last 2 weeks, we were in Utah doing the national park. We rent the RV to do a trip, and they're coming with us.
Oh.
And then it's like we're traveling with them everywhere. And then so they cannot imagine this if they don't expand their horizon, right? And then to build their horizontal identity. So anyway, it's a win-win for everybody.
That's great. And they even, once you told them and everything, and you told them that you wanted to start a family and you were having trouble, they even wanted to adopt for you, right? They were going to try.
Oh, my God. Yes. Brian won a tiny baby. And then so he liked Asian. And then, but we asked. And then in China, they don't allow gay adoption, definitely. So we don't want to lie. A lot of people say they're one guy, single guy, go to adopt in China. We don't want the kids starting as a big lie. It's like, so that's why we talked to my parents, and then my mom said, we'll go to adopt for you, and then when we visit United States, we'll re-adopt to you. And then, unfortunately, the only child policy only allowed them to have one kid.
Right.
So they cannot.
In China, you can only have one child.
Yeah, right now the policy starts changing because it's an aging population. Uh-huh. But before, it's for over 20 years, it's always like that.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, and I tell me a little bit now. Tell us a little bit now about your kids.
Oh, they're the joy of life. They're everything. It's like we have three girls, and then Phoebe is 3.5. Hanalei and Chelsea, they are 2, just turned 2.
You're busy.
Phoebe was full term. It is. We are busy. And then, but it's so much fun, though. And then after writing this book, actually all my time right now, other than my work, real estate, is all dedicated to the kids. And I'm also following, I don't know whether you guys heard of Acton Academy. It's a school that started by Laura in Austin. So, and then the way they want to teach kids, it's just so amazing. They want to each kid to be there on their hero's journey, and then to foster curiosity, and then never be a teacher in the classroom is always a guide to help the teacher to fail and then to stand up and to learn. So every year the kids need to sign a contract with them. So it's a completely charter school, and then to help the kids.
What is it called again?
It's called Acton Academy, A-C-T-O-N.
A-C-T-O-N, okay.
Yes, that's correct.
Wow.
And then they recommend 28 books. That's my, it's all about learning. And what they say, Laura, I met her in personal development retreat in Austin. What she said really inspired me is actually growing up with kids is actually to reshaping ourselves to make us a little bit better. And then so we can find out the genius in each kid. So she recommends 28 books. I'm reading one book a week right now, and then taking notes and writing on my blog what I've learned about education, about growing with kids, and about building a better self. So that's one thing what I'm doing for my three girls. Because every day seeing them is just the best thing in life. And then we work so hard, and then to have them. Anyway, I'm so sorry. You asked about how my kids. Like,
No. That's great. It's great information for people. And that sounds like an amazing school. I want to look into it.
How did you decide, both of you, who was fathering the children? Where?
Both of us. So we take turns, and then it's a little bit tough. It's like, what's their traditional role? Because they call me Baba. That means in Chinese.
Oh,
father.
I think you meant biologically.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I meant biologically. Oh. Like where this whose sperm was used to
surrogacy.
Oh, that's a big biology practice. So basically, the first time we got an egg donor, and then we made embryos for Brian and for myself. And then so we planned one boy from Brian, one girl from me, so the sperm with the same egg donor. And then somehow we lost the baby, I think it's in 12 weeks. Oh. And that's when, that's Brian, is a little boy. And then Brian don't have any embryo left. And I have a lot of embryo left. So the second time, is a little bit tangent story. The second time we did it again, but at first I just want to go easy. So I said, let's just use all my frozen embryos. So you'll all be biologically related to me. And my mom actually come out to say how selfish I could be. And then this is cost money, you know, to get a new egg donor and to go through this. That's another $20,000-$30,000. So, and then we end up to find a new egg donor. And then this time biology proved me completely wrong. All Brian's successful, all me, my fail. So we use Brian's from the second egg donor. And then we use one from the first egg donor with me, and then to plan two more girls in the surrogate's body. So basically, they're twins, but they're not genetically related at all.
Oh, wow. My gosh. That's amazing.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
One is a blonde girl. One is a half Chinese.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. This is so incredible. Wow.
Yeah, they cannot look more different.
I know. I've seen you have a you really have a beautiful family. It's like the ultimate. It's just, it's incredible. So,
thank you.
And anybody who's interested in surrogacy, and who I know you answer a ton of questions in the book about it, and you talk about it, you know, in terms of really trying to help people and guide them through it, because it's really it's an exhausting process.
Yeah, it is. And then there are so many clinic or agency, they're charging so much money, and then the process is complicated. And then so it's so easy to understand what's the detail, what are the risks in each part. And then a lot of time why I wrote this book, the second part is all about the surrogacy, is I just want to document all my journeys. It's like every single day, even detail the expense to a dinner with my surrogate. Because I think those are important to let people understand the real journey, other than it's a textbook, you know, surrogacy.
Yeah.
So that's why we want to share just some personal part that hopefully people can relate.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing with us. And I love the book. I really did. Enjoyed it. And I knew the second that I found you on Instagram and started following you and everything, I knew I had to have you on, because I think you have such a beautiful story.
You.
And I love where you've ended up and the struggles that you've gone through. And I just think it's amazing. And so thank you for sharing. So where can everybody find you? I know your book is, I got it on Amazon, so I know you can get it on Amazon.
And it's on 2dads3girls.com. So it's a number 2 and number 3, 2dads3girls.com. And then there we have, like, if you want to understand our surrogacy, their surrogacy detail cost, you can download it. It's every single expense we have there. And also, I just started a blog there to document all the books I wrote, I read. And then I will detail all the summaries once a week about every single book that if you want to follow us about our learning journey with the girls. That's my next chapter, I think, to grow with the girls and to be a better parent than I could be. So 2dads3girls.com.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
Congratulations, man.
Yeah.
what a journey.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're doing some good stuff.
Yeah. So really, we're so grateful that you came on, and I know there's more. So maybe in the future we can do a maybe we can even do a double session with Brian. So
that would be wonderful.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Nick. And everybody, you know, go to it's 2 girls and 3 dads.
Not
and.
Two girls, three
two
dads.
Two girls, three dads.
No, two dads, three girls.
I need a coffee. Somebody bring me a coffee.
So it's 2 dogs,
anyway,
and 6 girls.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That would be some all weird website coming up.
Right, exactly. All right, but we'll link it everywhere. And thank you so much. It was so wonderful talking to you. And
thank you for doing this. I really enjoy your podcast, especially the Gay Dad episode. I learned a lot. And, you know, to hear different people's story. You guys are doing amazing things out there. Please continue doing
it. Thank you. Well, we are. You too. So, all right. Well, you have a wonderful day with your girls. Enjoy the ferry.
Thank you.
Okay.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.